Hello and welcome to Talks with Tom, WBFY's program of interviews conducted by Tom Gilligan, who lives in Swanville and Brooklyn, New York.
Good afternoon, folks. We're here on Saturday afternoon with Charlotte. How do you pronounce your name?
Herbold.
Okay. Charlotte is a wonderful woman that I've become friends with, who is, let's say, a mature citizen. She's been around for a while. She had an enormous challenge when she first came to Maine, and I thought it was quite inspiring because when Charlotte and her husband and six children came here and started a farm in 1970, they were all at the farm, and they had two more children in the 4 years since they came there, doing wonderful things. And then, unfortunately, her husband, Tony, was killed in a tractor accident. Now, their oldest child is 16 after the tragedy, and somehow they held it together. What happened, Charlotte? What did you do after such a tragedy?
We had a routine. Each child had chores to do. It was a very old-fashioned idea that we would share this farm work. They'd go to school. They'd read books at night. We didn't have a television for a long time. My parents eventually gave us one. But I wanted, and we both wanted, a life for our family that was central, where the people came together to be together at night, as opposed to Berkeley, where we'd come from, where everybody was always going somewhere else. So the farm was a way of bringing our lives together and making us into a family in old-fashioned terms.
How close were the nearest neighbors?
We could see them across the river, but not very close. We were on the Union River, which was a very beautiful sight. Oh. Our farm up on the hillside above the river.
In Orno, was it?
No, in Amherst.
Amherst, Maine,
out in Hancock County.
Okay.
And there the kids could swim in the river, the rapids, right down at the bottom of our driveway. We had pasture land.
Okay.
We had woods. We had a riding ring that they built so that they could ride their horses. We had cows, and we had pigs, and we had geese, and we had a milk cow, and we had an orchard, and we had a huge vegetable garden.
You were busy in those 4 years.
We were very busy.
You bought a pre-existing farm with your savings from working for several years. And got a mortgage, and you and Tony did this together. Were you holding any jobs on the outside at the time?
Oh, yes. My husband was a professor.
Oh, he was?
Yes, and he taught at the University of Maine in Orono. He got the job when we were still in Berkeley.
Okay.
And after he died, I went to work for the University of Maine. I loved my job. I taught English for a couple of years. And then I got a separate job in a program called the Onward Program.
Onward.
It's a trio program that allowed adults to come into the university, take some courses, and then go into, matriculate into regular degree programs. So I was the person who got to teach the people who wanted to return to the university.
Ah.
And many of them were single mothers like me.
Really?
Yes. So it was a perfect job for me.
Yeah, especially since you know you were very single. You got this job after his death.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah. So I would go to work and then come home by 3 o'clock. My boss understood I had to come home by 3 o'clock because that was when my children got off the school bus. I also had older children who, my children pretty much looked after each other, but I made sure that I was there as well. And we spent an awful lot of our time on the farm. When we weren't working, which we were most of the time, dancing. We danced a lot.
Did somebody play an instrument?
Yes, my children played instruments, and of course we also danced to records and stuff. And reading. My children read a lot. And cooking. My children are all very good cooks, especially the boys, although the boys and the girls are good cooks.
So what happens next? You're now teaching, and you have 8 children, and the farm is still functioning. Are you having crops and all that, or somebody
yes,
helping?
We kept the garden.
Kept the garden.
We sold the animals.
Okay.
The beef cattle went first. For one thing, they were always getting out of the fences. I mean, our fences, my husband built, and a friend of his had built this wonderful, beautiful white rail fence all along the pasture. But the cows could just knock it over. I mean, the Frosties would...
He wasn't really experienced in building fences for cows, I guess.
No.
Huh? Okay.
So the cows would get out, and we'd have to go chase them. And the horses, too. That was certainly a problem. We sold the beef cows. We kept a couple of horses. My son had a horse. My daughter had a horse. And we kept on having pigs. Hannah, my daughter Hannah, was always in charge. And they would get out. Have you ever chased a pig?
No, I've heard it's quite a challenge.
It's really?
Especially tackling them. Or what's the expression? Wrestling with one? Yeah.
Well, they tend to run between your legs. You try to encircle them and prevent them from getting between your legs. Anyway, so we spent a lot of time chasing animals, but we made it. We really did. Everybody was willing to help. I think some of my children, not all, most of them appreciate the farm experience. A lot of them, they've all moved off now. One's a professor in Berkeley. One, my sons are engineers and things like that.
Anybody become a farmer?
No. My son Tim would like to be a farmer, but he's an engineer.
Okay.
So, anyway, they...
He's a farmer on the side, huh?
Yeah, on the side. He still has a place, and he still goes out to Amherst. He has a camp there and a garden. And his children also grew up, you know, going out to the garden.
Mm-hmm.
But they all know how to work. Some of them say, oh, that farm was just such baloney. I don't believe that we did that.
Wow. So you're able to make the payments and, gee.
Oh, well, I owned the farm. Tony had insurance on it.
Oh.
So when he died, we owned the farm. And mm-hmm. I was absolutely scared to death to sell it. I had not ever bought a house before.
Uh-huh.
So I stayed on 14 more years after he died. And then finally, in 1988, the children had all grown up and gone off to college. They all graduated except one from college. Three of them have PhDs.
If my math is right, I think your youngest would have been 14 roughly at the time in 88.
That's right.
Yeah.
And she was in like 8th grade.
Oh, okay.
9th grade, I think.
Okay.
So we bought a house in Winterport.
In the town?
Yes. It was, I wanted to go back to doing the kinds of things that I had done before we had the farm. Particularly acting.
Acting.
I was an actor with the Belfast Maskers.
Oh.
So I wanted to be where I could easily get to rehearsals and go be in the plays. I did that. And my children grew up and moved away. And
wow. That's,
had children and come home once a year. Every August, they come to Maine.
I find it quite exciting that you let yourself go back to acting after all that, and your youngest was, as you said, 14. Gee, that's amazing, because some of us don't make those steps. Yeah, that's got my attention.
Well, I quit when I turned 80. I quit acting. I said, I can't remember my lines.
Okay.
But
funny.
I certainly have enjoyed it. I do now teach theater classes at the senior college.
And what's that class called?
I've taught several classes over the years. I've taught plays about old people, including King Lear.
Okay.
And a play called The Ride Down Mount Morgan by Arthur Miller. I've taught classes, single author classes. I taught a class in Charlie Chaplin.
Huh.
I taught a class in, I've taught Shakespeare. I've taught Eugene O'Neill. And I now am preparing a class in Woody Allen.
You're in your 80s now, and you're teaching, and you're quite lively, and...
I'm okay.
And you're living in Belfast. You walk around the town?
Yes, I do.
Some? And,
yes, I do.
I know you drive.
And I drive, and I... Let's see, what else do I do? Well, I'm supposed to be gardening, but it's too hot. My farm has shrunk to that one little pot down there.
So you have a lot of friends in the area, I would assume?
Yes, I do, and I have some old friends. I still have some friends from the days of the farm and from the days when I worked at the university. And you know some of my friends, I think.
Yeah, folks that have been around, got some good rich experience, shall we say. Not necessarily ones that they would have elected to have, but good experiences. Well, what drew you to Belfast?
The Belfast Maskers. And also the fact, I think I'm a natural-born hippie. I just wasn't very comfortable growing up in the Mormon environment of Salt Lake City. I had wonderful parents. Okay, everybody's good here but me. I'm not. When the 60s came along and all of that sort of 50s respectability began to crumble, I was happy. I loved it. Because people forget that the 60s wasn't just about drugs and stuff and free sex. It was about everybody being the same. A lot of it was about equality. Yeah. And that people wanted to look poor and farmerish. Nobody wanted to run around all suited up.
Oh, that's easily forgotten, you know. That just seems incidental, but it was intentional, yeah.
It certainly was. And in that respect, I liked Berkeley. It was just that Berkeley was getting too... They were blowing up the banks, and we couldn't find our children.
What do you mean you couldn't find them?
Well, they were out playing on the campus, and Ronald Reagan sprayed everybody with tear gas.
Oh, jeez.
So, and People's Park was surrounded. I don't know if you remember, it was surrounded with soldiers with bayonets and stuff.
When did you come to Belfast?
To Belfast, 2004.
2004,
I've been here since 2000.
Okay.
I sold the house in Winterport and moved to this apartment.
Is Belfast much of a change from Winterport?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. If you know anything about Waldo County politics, you know that Belfast is a Democratic hub and that Winterport is very much a Republican hub. Winterport is a place where you can do whatever you want. There is no zoning. There are a lot of lovely old houses, authentic houses, but they've just put up a Family Dollar store on Main Street in Winterport. So it's very much a Republican place.
I see.
You should be able to do whatever you want with your own property.
So you're teaching these classes now. How do you conduct the class?
I prepare a syllabus. I have the students introduce themselves briefly, very briefly, and just say anything that they know about the subject to begin with. I begin usually, sometimes if we're studying a playwright, the first class is always an introduction to his life and his work. And that's just a standard lecture on who is this playwright and what did he do and why is it important to study him. And then they all say what they've said, what they know about him already.
Okay.
And so then we begin sometimes with reading parts. Sometimes when we read the plays, there are a lot of ways of reviewing the plays. We read them. Sometimes we read parts. Then we watch excerpts of productions. So that with Arthur Miller, for example, we'll see Death of a Salesman, and we'll see various excerpts of various plays of his and talk about them. I really want them to participate by asking questions, by responding to the plays in some way, by saying anything that they remember about having seen Death of a Salesman or what it has to say, how it comments on American values. The Death of a Salesman, for example, is all about materialism and its effects on that family.
Right. It's a pretty, very powerful play.
Yes, it is. There's another, we discovered a play that we put on by Arthur Miller that we put on at the library. We did a reading called The American Clock, and it was a biographical. Arthur Miller's family lost all their money in the Depression, and they had to sell their house, their fancy house in New York, and move to a smaller place, and they never really recovered. It's a wonderful play about loss.
What's it called?
The American Clock.
Yeah, I saw him on Charlie Rose once. I think he had the broadest shoulders I've ever seen on a man. he had plenty of opinions and real-life experiences.
He was politically, he was very active. He had bad judgment in women. Well, I think his the wife after Marilyn Monroe. I mean, who would marry Marilyn Monroe? Anyway, she was
there's a few guys out there.
A nymphomaniac and a drug addict. Never mind. There's an interesting movie on the making of The Misfits, that last movie that they make. Oh. About they were out in the middle of the desert, John Houston. Oh, it was all crazy. Marilyn wouldn't show up, and they'd all have to sit in the middle of the desert and wait for her to come to the to the filming. And oh dear. Anyway,
what's the name of that film? Do you know? I haven't
heard. Misfits?
No, there's a movie about the making
of it? About the making. I think it's called The Making of the Misfits or something like that.
Sounds good.
But it's about, it is, it's very, very interesting. And then then he married this photographer and they lived happily ever after until she died. And then he moved in some young chickie. And and his son-in-law, Daniel Day-Lewis, had to come and boot her out.
Okay.
He's married to Rebecca, Rebecca Miller, who is Arthur Miller's daughter.
Looking back on these 80-something years, what do you remember most?
Well, I like my life. It's been a life that was filled with unexpected events, but I like being old. And what I like about being old is
that's huge.
That I always wanted to be old and wise. And I thought, I'm never going to grow up. I thought, why don't I grow up? But I have. I feel like I've grown up. And I'm able to look after myself still. I'll be 84 in January.
Oh, bless your heart. I think that's going to be our title. I like being old. Who would have guessed that, you know?
Yeah.
It's wonderful.
Yeah. Because I do like, well, I don't have, I mean, I don't have anything, one to take care of.
Okay.
No one has to take care of me.
Mm-hmm.
I have enough money.
Right.
I get paid for not working.
Right.
I have friends. I eat well. I mean, how many people, you know, I'm not a refugee. I'm not dependent.
What about the dismissal that a lot of older folks feel by younger folks that they're, you know, they would just bypass them at a party as quickly as they can, or...
Well, that's true, but there are huge advantages to being on the margin. If you happen to be an observer, if you get out of your own way, I mean, you don't need to be the center of attention all the time. If you're on the margins, you can observe other people. And that's how you become wise, not by, you know, putting yourself out there all the time.
Okay, so maybe instead the title will be The Advantages of Old Age, aside from still being alive, of course. Putting yourself on the margins and therefore being able to not be dependent on what other people are doing or not doing with you.
Right. My new role models are a certain sort of Chinese woman in San Francisco. They ride the buses. They have little hats and they have shopping bags.
Okay.
And they get on the bus. They look very peaceful and absolutely imperturbable. You can't knock them off balance.
Really?
For one thing, they do Tai Chi in the morning.
Oh.
But when they do their shopping for their family, it's a daily basis. They take their bag and they go to Chinatown and they buy the vegetables and whatever they need for their dinner. They get back on the bus and they go home and they cook for their families. As you know, Chinese children do extraordinarily well in school. In fact, at the University of California at Berkeley, they cannot declare Chinese students a minority because otherwise they'd be only Chinese. They excel in school. And the reason is grandmother. They do so well. And of course, what you see if you go to a Chinese restaurant is the grandmother's there. The children come from school and they sit down and they're doing their homework.
So the grandmother really has a very important role.
Yeah, very
important. Being a grandfather now myself, I like hearing that. Yeah.
Yeah.
What does the grandfather do?
I don't see the grandfathers as much, although I'm sure that they're around, probably working in the restaurant. They're probably working with with the others. I don't know. I just look. See, I was as bad as everybody else. I spent a lot of time not looking at old people, just ignoring them. And it's not, I suppose it can be painful, you know, to be sidelined. But everything comes at a price. And the kind of independence that old age brings.
Okay.
It's part of the price. And it's part of growing up. You know, because really, I don't think we are the center of attention. And it's not good for us.
And you're not learn not to be dependent on that. That you can, your life can be bigger than that.
Yeah.
Thank you, Charlotte. This has been wonderful to talk about the advantages of aging and problems, even catastrophes that can strike us. So thanks for talking about all
this. Being old is also an adventure because nobody ever asks you what you're going to be, what you want to be when you get old. You know,
right.
So you don't know. It's unknown territory.
If you were winding back the clock and somebody said to you, what would you like to be when you grow old, what would you have said 40 years ago?
I had no idea. I used to say, what do you want to be when you grow up? A wise old lady. Well, okay. I'm a little wiser than I was. I may not be wise, but I'm a whole lot wiser than I used to be.
Well, thanks. This has been a lot of fun talking with you today,
thanks,
Charlotte.
Tom.
Okay.
Thanks,
Charlotte.
Tom.
And this is WBFY here in Belfast. I'm Tom Gilligan here with Charlotte talking about the advantages of aging.
That concludes our interview with Charlotte Herbold, conducted by Tom Gilligan. The topic, I like being old. Join us again next week for more interviews of Waldo County residents. Thanks for listening, and we return you to Ratchet the Robot for music programming.